All right, fam, it's your boy, Z-Dog MD. We are here with Incident Report with a very special guest. I say this every time, but this time it may actually be true. Now, this is a personal, if this were American Idol, this is where Simon would be like, this is self-indulgent. And the reason is I have a doc on the show who actually is like bizarro me from a different dimension. So early on in my career, when I was trying to be come up with something for Z-Dog MD, like, who am I going to be? I need a name. It wasn't Z-Dog MD. I was like, I want to start a channel on YouTube called Placebo TV. And I did a Google search to see, has anyone done this? Doubtful. It had been done. The Placebo Journal and the YouTube channel Placebo TV was done by one Dr. Doug Farrago, who is a primary care family practice doc at the time in Maine, and had a publication that reached like 10,000 subscribers of hilarious medical satire. I ended up getting the entire collection and going, when I grow up, I want to be Doug Farrago. Well, Doug is not only a really hilarious guy and a physician, he's a direct primary care pioneer. Direct primary care we've had on the show before is where it's a flat fee for an unlimited, all-you-can-treat access to amazing primary care, True Health 3.0. He's an inventor, and he's a freaking renaissance man. And he's here on the show, Doug Farrago. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. I appreciate being here. I really do. This is, let me throw this back at you. See, the difference between you and I is you have talent, right? So, and I'm serious about that. I want to blow smoke up your, you know, the videos you've done, the if I was one-tenth of what you were, I would actually be interviewing here would be my show, but your talent is phenomenal. And this is no BS. You know, your talent with the videos you've done, the way you interview, the stuff you've done, I watch and it's blown me away. So if I gave you anything towards that, great. You know, I don't know. I might listen. I'm not that interesting, but your stuff is phenomenal.
Look, dude. Okay. First of all, thank you. Second of all, you're wrong. So here's the thing. When I was trying to, I was so you know, burned out, you know, end stage moral injury. And I was like, how am I going to use my own? I'm an oppositional defiant. I'm a bit of an outlier. I have to be a jerk. It's just who I am. So I saw this mess. I want to do something. I said, okay, I'm going to use social media. Who's doing this in medicine? Well, there was nobody. Ken Jeong, who you know, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We can talk about that.
Yeah. Later on. But he was the only example that I'd seen of a physician who'd like been a mainstream internal medicine guy and then went on and did these things. But he wasn't talking about medicine. He was out with the muggles doing medical stuff, which was great. Super talented guy. But then I saw you, and you had this Placebo Journal, which was in comic book kind of format, like Mad Magazine.
Right.
And I would open up a thing, and there was this fake drug ad for Scrotox.
Yes.
It was Botox for your scrotum.
Right. Brilliant, right?
And I was like, you know what? Why didn't I think of that? And it was genius.
It was to make those testicles shiny. It was just
dude. Because who doesn't want a shiny testicle?
Exactly. And the bottom line is, when you see drug ads now, all my mind always did was like, okay, this is ridiculous. First of all, it's gouging, it's nothing new. How can I mock it? And and so the only power I had at that time was to mock every freaking thing that I saw. And there was no one like you was out there doing it. No one was doing it. Everybody was accepting HMOs. Oh, they're doing good. Or administrators, they're out for our good. It's like, dude, it's ridiculous. And so I was employed by a hospital. I had no other way but to attack, but through the humor. Now, that still got me in trouble.
Yeah, tell me about that, because I looked at you and I'm like, well, this guy's getting away with it.
So I multiple times, right? So I would, I think I told you, but Cigna, at one point we mocked Cigna. They had a great little emblem at that point. I think they're absorbed by somebody now, but it was a nice tree with all these leaves on it. And we made a mockery of what they did. It just shredded them in there. And the emblem was Cigna with one leaf and everything was just dead, right? Then they came after my hospital. They were going to cancel the contract of the whole contract with the hospital because of what I did.
Wow.
And so, you know, that I was called in, always called in. I had my own seat there anyway. And so it was back and forth. And later on, when I actually left, I actually went into the HR files and found that their lawyers and the hospital's lawyers saying, you know what? The Cigna ad is, our lawyer said, the Cigna ad is not enough for them to cancel our contract, but it may be enough for us to fire Farrago. Wow. They never did, but they wanted me. Wow. See, dude, I can see their point. Listen, I'm mocking everything.
Yeah.
And it's going national. Washington Post wrote about me, U.S. News and World Report. I'm mocking everything that they hold, that the administration of that hospital holds so dearly, and I'm shredding them. So why are they going to keep? I can't believe they kept me as long as they did. I never got fired. I've never been, yeah, so they did. And I kept, you know, when I went from that hospital and I went to another hospital for 5 years, I just kept doing it. So yeah, we did not hold back. The key was there were some patient stories, but it was never like the patient was injured to make fun of.
Mm. A hippo was okay?
Hippo?
Both.
Yeah. So, yeah, all names were changed. You can tell who it was and probably not okay. but you know, we were in the first on, I knew the opioid crap was going on then. And we were doing stories like... My favorite Munchausen was a story. Okay,
but this was what, like 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah, this is 10. Yeah, at least. And so
it's when I started. Yeah,
my favorite Munchausen malingerers say the darndest things. Okay, those darn narc seekers. Right, those are the titles, and we had stories about them, and they were educational actually, because when you look at it, you're like, oh man, that was a great scam that guy pulled, and it was scams that patients who were abusing our narcotics, how they would come to your office and do they were great stories. So they were actually, we were ahead and knew that was a problem. So we would put that stuff out there. So we definitely cut a cutting edge. Definitely, I personally got in trouble, but it was the only way for me mentally to survive. Honestly, you talk about moral injury. I went through it in residency. I went through it in medical school. I can tell you stories about that, but I was burned out hard. And so when I was in, I needed therapy. Mm. This was my therapy. This is your therapy, right?
Yeah.
That was my therapy to survive. I didn't give a crap if anybody else laughed. I had a couple writers, Vance Lassie, great guy, used to write for me and still one of my best friends. People would help me, but I would just sit back, you know, I can just look at something and say, oh yeah, here we go. And so, and you do the same thing when you do, you know, Vader and everything else.
It's funny because you asked me when you came here, so does this bring you a kind of a joy, the creativity in the process of it? I'm like, absolutely. Yeah. Like there's shit we put out there that we know it's not going to get views, but me and Tom and Logan are laughing so hard that we're like, we're putting it out there. People aren't going to like it. I don't care. It's for us, right?
Right, right.
Because it is. It's a kind of a catharsis. Now, what you were doing, this is an important point to put on it. People will get, you got in trouble and they yelled at you this and that, but are you making fun of patients? No. You're actually pointing out through satire, which is the most, one of the highest coping mechanisms and one of the highest teaching mechanisms in my mind, what is so dysfunctional in our system. If we can't even talk about it, and humor is a kind of a way to broach it without all the drama and the nastiness.
I'll give you a story. I put in, it was in the journal. It was about, no, I didn't say it was about me then, but it was about me. When I was in medical school, it was back then, University of Texas at Houston, and that was the Wild West. And so they brutalized medical students. And that doesn't happen as much today. That would not get away with the stuff they got away with. I remember I was an OBGYN labor ward and this rotation, this one guy hated me. Oh. And it happens, man, people hate me and that can happen. This guy hated me. Now, he knew about me. I used to be, I used to wrestle in college, box in college. I was going to be a pro boxer. That's a long story, but so he knew about me a little bit, but he just hated me. And I'm not sure why. He would on call brutalize me. I mean, he would not let me sleep, let everybody else sleep and get me, he'd buzz me to get him a pencil.
Oh, wow. Straight abuse.
And just straight abuse. And then would mock me, you know, during rounds. And what am I going to say, right? At one point, I went to the chief. I said, this guy's, he goes, well, you got to do what you got to do. I said, well, there's nothing I can do. I got to pass. So I get past it. I pass that rotation. And I'm on surgery. And I'm walking by with my new group. And he's walking by with his new group. And he stops his group and starts mocking me.
Oh, wow.
How's little Dougie doing on surgery? And then just starts, he's getting them all to laugh. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Wow.
So I said, okay. And so one day I made sure I got it to the OBGYN hallway. I found where he was and I caught him by himself. And I said, I ran up to him. I said, dude, if you ever say anything to me again, anything, I will beat the living crap out of you like you've never seen before. And this guy was like 6'2". I said, you may get a couple punches in, but if you don't kill me, I'm going to kill you. So you say one more word and I will kill you.
Wow.
And so I was in the dean's office the next day. when I did leave him, right, when I did leave this dude, he was like crying. And like, okay, good. Now you're a big tough guy. And some other resident tries to help him. What's wrong? He tells him, and then the other resident comes by and says, hey, show some respect. Show some respect. So that's what it was like back then, right? I had no choice. I went to the dean before to see what can I do. I had no choice. So I had to pull where I came from, New York, and just get in this guy's grill. So I got in major trouble in medical school for that.
But so you know what? So worth it.
I used to see him in the parking lot sometimes later on, and I'd see him walking. So I would purposely just stop and then just stare him and just keep watching like that. And he just kept walking as fast as he can because he didn't know if I seemed crazy to him.
The biggest bullies are the biggest weaklings.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Dude, that stuff, so insecure. If that stops him from doing what he does to somebody else, I mean, at least I can stand up for myself. He was trying to just destroy me.
Wow.
So I wrote about that and put it in. It was actually in the book, The Placebo Chronicles, which came out by Random House, and it's called Respect, that story.
Can you still buy that?
Yeah, I think it's out of print, but it's still Placebo Chronicles. I don't know. I think, I don't know. But yeah, so that was the only book that I did from the, which is really a consortium of the stuff we did in the journal. But yeah, this is a tough job, man. Very tough. You're the only one really talking about it. And the thing is, what pisses me off is burnout's new for us. How moral injury is new for us. How is that new for us? Mm. Just because we had now metrics, which are garbage anyway.
Garbage, yeah.
How is this a new thing? It was a thing that's going on for a very long time. We would get beat up all the time. I would sit there at my hospital meetings and they'd say, well, this doctor wants to go part-time, and I'm like, well, shouldn't she get full benefits? No. I said, well, she does call every 4 nights. Do you not count those hours of work? No, we don't. What world don't you count those hours? If you as an administrator were working every 4 nights, you'd be counting those hours, and they cut our benefits. We always were kowtowing to the man. And so I think things are changing. You're helping do that with this, and you've been on a crusade for that, which is awesome.
Well, and again, this is why you're the OG, Doug. Like, you have been fighting this fight since the beginning. And the thing is, you're an outlier. And I say this in the truest positive sense of the word, which is you're not somebody who, and I think there's a group of people like this. There's many actually outliers in medicine, but they're beaten down. Most of them are beaten back into the mold and said, just play the game and just, you'll retire, but you'll be an empty shell of a human inside.
Right.
There are those who just can't do that. So, like, Peter Attia is one of them. He was on the show.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
one of those.
He's I have this like man crush on, which is weird.
So do I. It's the baldness.
No, it's not. The guy's freaking ridiculously smart. It kind of pisses me off.
It's like the baldness.
I think I'm a baldist because all bald guys look alike to me. So I think okay, but
that's racist.
Yeah, baldist, different. It's a different story.
Very different. Very different.
But the dude's level of intelligence is way high, and I've communicated to him via email and so forth about a few different things. We have a history of boxing and so forth.
That's
and
right.
Yeah. I think I bother him. I think he's like, I think he thinks I'm stalking him, which is a really, I'm like, oh, that's so sad that I'm stalking him.
Every human being is like a gnat or buzzing around him because he's that smart.
Yeah,
he's truly an outlier. But as an outlier, you weren't able to just box it up and let it go. You started inventing stuff. You created the placebo. Tell me about your inventing.
Yeah, so so here's the thing about my inventions. I don't know what it is. I have to have something, my mind just spins, right? So you can become schizophrenic or a lunatic if you don't use it for good, right?
Yeah.
You use it for crazy crap, whether it's Vader or some of the videos. When you were the, the ugliest woman I've ever seen in a video, that was you.
How dare you? Okay, I spent hours on my makeup.
The only one closer was that dude, Tom, when he was the anti-vaxxer. Because you two, and again, I still strangely attracted to both of you when you were wearing it.
You know what? You're welcome.
And I had a knee injury when I wrestled in college, blew my knee out, had 5 surgeries, and I could not, I was trying to squat down to do something, put a plate on the plug socket, and I couldn't do it, so I put a pillow behind my knee, and I'm like, wow, that feels great. A year later, I got a patent for something called the Knee Saver, which is a padding you put on your calf, and a lot of baseball catchers wear it. So that's actually the first Knee Saver. Took me 9 years to actually find patent in a year, 9 years of work
to get it produced.
To get it, and then it exploded, and then 5 companies stole my patent. Oh. But it's the first Knee Saver in the Hall of Fame. I have a card that I can go to the Hall of Fame anytime I want.
Wow.
And I've met players over the years, and it's a great product. I made a little bit of money, and that was a cool thing. I lost, then the patent expired. So I've always invented things, and then the other thing I invented, I'll show you here in a second, which you're going to put on and look ugly in.
Oh, hell yeah.
my son had a major concussion in high school, lost his almost his 10th grade year. Football season was gone. He was not the same kid. Wow. And I'm like, how the hell is there no treatment for concussions? And so I looked at the research and the studies on animal models and cooling the head after a concussion is there. Human studies are still pending. One just came out, said it looks good. So I talked with actually one of the companies that actually stole my patent, made peace with them, All-Star, and we made a product called the Cryo Helmet, which is cool. It's incredible, not only for, I don't know where I show this.
Oh, my God, that's Daft Punk as hell.
So this is the Cryo Helmet, and this is...
Hold it up, Doug, right in front of you.
So this is why I'm here, by the way. They're paying my trip down. I'm a vendor. I got to be a vendor, which is a humbling position right now, where I'm a doctor as a vendor.
A vendor at the National Athletic...
At the National Athletic Training Association Conference. Yep. So this is incredible for... I'll show it to you.
And by the way, this is not a sponsored show.
Yeah,
so you're just, they're paying your way to go to NADA, and I was like, come be on the show, because I spoke for them before, and they're awesome.
And I appreciate you doing this. So this is the Cryo Helmet. It's just a cooling helmet that you wear on your head for headaches, migraines, and head injuries, right? So this is what it looks like. This is how, that's it. And you put it on.
How do you cool it? You put it in the freezer?
It's in the freezer. All this is ice. It stays cold on your head for an hour and a half. And daughter, who has migraines, wears this and goes to bed with it because it's so cool and relaxing. Yeah.
I'm afraid this battle station will be quite operational.
Yeah. Isn't it perfect? It's so Star Wars, right? Right. So you could pull it like.
Some more space balls.
It is more space balls. But so that's why I'm here. I invented the Cryo Helmet, but that's another journey. It's 7 years on this journey. It hasn't made it yet. It's going slowly, and that's just what, you know, this is going to take it over the edge. But that's why I'm here.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah, yeah.
Doug Frago, I thought you were here for me.
Okay. No.
A. Yeah. B, my head is so flipping cold right now.
Is it too cold?
No.
Okay.
It's not cold enough. It's 100 degrees outside.
Yeah.
This actually feels really good.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Actually, all joking aside, I'm going to take this off because I feel like an Imperial Guard.
Yeah.
Ah!
Oh, so it's just around your neck. Did you pull it around
Just this?
Yeah, what are we doing here?
I can't see. I don't know where.
In the front, here.
Here?
Yeah, there. There it is. That's it. Yeah, there, you got it.
Take it off.
So
it's
great for heat recovery. We have actually the, and we don't pay anybody. We don't pay you. And we don't, they don't pay me, really. And but they, like the heavyweight champion, Deontay Wilder, wears it after he spars. And we were just watching Showtime, and he's there using it. It's like, okay,
that's
great.
That's really awesome.
Yeah,
it's gratifying to see.
It is. Listen, so inventing is a part of my life because it solves, you know, you feel like you accomplish a project. It's something, a puzzle you can figure out. And so for my son and the concussion, and my daughter then for migraines, this product's incredible for migraines, right? So if I can get a product, weirdly enough now, that can lower the medication burden on patients, awesome. So this has worked really well for that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we had a physician inventor, Amy Baxter, on the show, who created a product called Buzzy, which uses cold and vibration neuromodulation for needle pain.
Okay.
And it's a similar idea. And actually, she has a neck thing that's a cold thing for neck pain. But this is the first time I've seen it.
I'll have my lawyer look at that.
I love it if you sue Amy. Like, right. She's like the nicest lady. Right.
Seriously, I'm here for that as a vendor for that. So that's why I wanted to come. I got to tell them I'm here. So that's why I'm here. It works great for migraines. But for me, again, solves that piece. The stuff I don't do anymore. So the journal's over. It was in 2001, 2011.
Placebo journal.
And so all I do since 2002, I have a blog called the Authentic Medicine Blog, which I have now multiple writers. That's been going daily for 18 years. Part of my therapy.
What's the website for that?
AuthenticMedicine.com. That's extremely popular as well. And because I think we say the truth where some other popular medical blogs don't.
You know, I got to be honest. You say some stuff on that blog that I'm afraid to share.
Yeah, it's authentic. I don't think it's cursing
of it, but it's
truth. You know, we cut, you know, listen, I if you're not mocking administrators, you're not in this job. You're not doing your job. Mm. There's 3,000% increase in administrators since 2010
to 1 ratio of administrators.
I don't know. What do you call it, a bunch? Is it a gaggle of administrators?
It's a murder of administrators.
A muggle? No. There's something called, what was the thing of pugs? Puggle. Puddle. Anyway.
A puddle of pugs?
Yeah, something like that.
So, owned a pug, Doug Frago. You're cutting close to the bone.
Administrators are, we used to go to meetings and realize it's the same show every meeting, right? You ever notice that, right? Yeah, like every time you went to a hospital meeting, it was the same show. It was like that. That's when I came up with in the journal one time called, instead of the play, the producers, we did the administrators, right? As the head administrator, it was the same act. They did the same act. The first person would come in and say what the problem with the money is and the budget and act. And then the second person would come in and it was the same thing. And then they would take their bow and they leave. And like, we're like, we just saw this show a month ago.
Oh, my gosh.
So we did the administrators
it's
as a play.
It's springtime for CEO and Germany.
That's your next level, dude.
Yeah. Take it
so,
to the next. The producers.
Honestly, that is your next. You've got, in my opinion, you got Vader that you're using, right? You have this, but you don't have the... You're not doing many skits yet, are you?
Oh, we do a lot of skits.
Which ones?
So,
give me an example. Maybe I'm thinking the same thing.
So we did a skit called Acronyms, where we spoke entirely in acronyms.
Yes. Okay. Good.
We do the Metamojis, but no, we're not as skit based as you guys were, because you guys had a lot of stuff, like the dude with the PSA.
You're set up to do this. That's your next level, in my opinion, because you're a great actor too, and. And you can play multiple levels of. You can bring that idiot in, or both those idiots in, if you want.
These two morals?
Yeah. I'm seriously. That's okay. You did do it when you did the anti-vaxxer situation.
That's right.
When she
claimed, oh no, that wasn't acting. That was real. That was Courtney. Doug.
That was brilliant. See that? That's brilliant stuff. I don't know if you get enough credit or you should be patting yourself on. I will pat you guys in the back. That was brilliant.
You know what? Coming from you, it means something, because you're the only person who could possibly mentor me in medical satire comedy, because there's nobody else who does it.
There is so much stuff out there. Sometimes I wake up in a cold sweat. Like, I wish I had the journal again, because are you kidding me? I mean,
tell me some ideas. Give me some ideas and we'll produce.
Well, I won't. So let me give you an thing that you would. I don't even know how to mock this, but the and I won't get too political, but the Democrats in the House of Congress wanted to force insurance companies to cover birth control. Now, there's some moral stuff and what irrelevant. The point is, what would that cost an insurance company to buy birth control? First of all, it's like you can get it yourself cash, $9 a month if you cash. It would cost them pennies. So what's the win there, right? They're going to win for pennies, and the insurance company will then charge people $100 more a month, saying we got to cover these luxuries. So the thing is, I would mock that, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we do. I do in the Authentic Medicine blog. But there's ways that you can be doing that. I forget the name of that site that does like is it Reason? Gomer blog. They're good. I get that. And they were very appreciative of us. We gave them some stuff at the beginning, and they were very nice. So I have nothing against them. And actually, I like the Onion style that they do.
Yeah.
One thing we didn't do Onion style stuff. In other words, we didn't do any fake stories. It was either fake ads, but they were real medical stories that you can say, holy crap, that really happened. Onion does some good stuff. But there was like Reason TV does some funny stuff.
Right. Reason TV.
Yeah. Mocking them. There's so much stuff to mock.
Yeah.
Whether it's the drugs. The insurance company, these are the medical axis of evil, right?
So the axis of evil, that's right.
Yeah. So you have the medical axis of evil is pharmaceutical, insurance, and then the administrators.
Yeah, or hospital systems, exactly.
All day, it's shooting fish in a barrel.
You never run out of material, that's the great thing. And Vader is great because he can say everything that we're thinking and behind a mask. And you know, I would just, actually just spoke at the Healthcare Financial Management Association. Now you would think,
I can
see you rolling your eyes. You can think, well, this is going to suck. It's a bunch of administrators who have the bean counters.
Yeah.
Here's the weird thing. They are actually deep into how can we actually do the right thing and get paid. And that's the problem is so far, you have to do the wrong thing to get paid. You have to cut staff.
Yeah,
you have to treat doctors and nurses like commodities.
Yep.
You have to basically kick the patient out too soon or keep them too long.
Right.
And so what if we actually aligned incentives with that and then those guys can do the accounting? Well, it would actually work.
It would. And here's the difference between you and I. You're a good person. Okay? So you still are altruistic. I can see it in you. So I can see I feel like I'm like Darth Vader myself, right? I can still see the good in you. And I didn't have any left, right? So I would never talk for them just because I need to rip on them.
Yeah.
And I know I'm going to piss them off, right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's not going to stop me.
No, I get it. And you're not that you've held back much at all, but that's why I didn't get, I think, I didn't get the talks and stuff like that because, and I'm banned from the AFP for things I've said about the AFP. So, I mean.
Whereas I did a keynote for AFP.
Absolutely, right?
So, interesting.
Which is fine. I mean, it's fine.
Let's talk about
I'm not as wealthy as you, but that's fine.
You have a legitimate Big Lebowski bowling.
Yeah, that's all I can own right now.
I don't own that.
Yeah.
I have water.
Yeah.
Doug Farrago.
Dude, you've done it right. And I'm not saying my way was better. My way was worse, much worse. Okay.
The truth is your blog's called Authentic Medicine, and that's because you're always authentic. You never compromise. I've never seen you compromise. And the only way you compromise and it's appropriate is you will say, well, listen, I still see patients for a living.
Yes.
And therefore, I'm not going to curse. I'm not going to do all these things on the show that are going to be. You know, they'd be awkward, difficult for patients who see me as their
carrier. So my direct primary care practice, I've been filled I've been doing it 5 years, filled for 3 years, and you have to be careful about that, right? So I'm still been in practice now my 23rd year, my 30th year in medicine, and, you know, I have always kept on the line, right? So I have been, I said I wasn't fired. I actually was fired my second job when I was employed. The reason was they put paper in front of me saying, sign this. And I looked at it and it said, we're going to use a third party that's going to optimize your coding and billing. And on the bottom, you hold them harmless if it's wrong.
Oh, so if they overbill or something, and you're the one who goes to jail.
Yes. I said, I can't do that. They actually fired me.
Wow.
And then I had to get a lawyer. And on day 20, it was like 30-day notice. On day 29, they said, oh, okay, we're not firing you. And I had to go back to work, which is a bummer. I really should.
That sucked. You were like, I'm out.
I could have been sued. Yeah. So I do still always, you got to be careful, right? Because you are not protected as a physician. Honestly, though, you are not protected. The board is not your friend.
They are not your friend.
No,
you should
not
understand this.
No, they are not your friend at all. They have a quota, and they can say they don't. They do. And I can get in trouble just saying that. And the truth of the matter is, if they want to get you, they'll get you, and they will. You have no. If they got you on anything close, you're going to pay.
Yeah.
And you've got to bring major lawyers in with you to get out. So I think you have to be very careful. Somehow I got away with it with the journal. I actually don't think I could have done the journal today without the board getting me.
Honestly, I've had multiple letters from the board.
Is that true?
I have. Yeah, and it's always anti-vaxxers. Who say that I'm unprofessional. And apparently there's a professionalism statute in Nevada.
And there should be, but there has to be some, obviously...
some rules around that. So, yeah, exactly.
If you say a stupid joke in front of a patient, you could get in trouble.
Yeah, and that's... You know, listen, when they're your patient, I can understand unprofessionalism. When they have nothing to do with you?
No, I get it. But no, you're that's a level of what you did. So the balls that you took to go after them is... Unbelievable, massive, like massive. I like that. What was that thing when we were kids that you bounce around on?
Oh, the thing where you're hippity hop.
Yeah, you got hippity hop balls because
come close to the mic. Yeah,
oh, you got hippity hop balls because the bottom line is that's a bold move. I'm not even going to go into it just for that's how bad it is right now because they can ruin your reputation. I think you got to be very careful about that. And I think you took a stance for physicians. But if a doctor picks the wrong fight and he's in practice, you're done.
It's really true. And we've done shows about this with Todd Wolin talking about how his practice was attacked by anti-vaxxers. They ripped him new ones on Yelp and Health Grades and all this fake reviews.
Right.
And those sites don't give a damn.
No, there's nothing
you can do. Now, he's actually started to create an organized effort to actually fight back, and it's working. So, and he shames people publicly. Like, he shames Google. Like, the way Google does reviews is shameful.
Yeah.
They're all fake. And this is people's livelihoods, their calling, their passion. And some, you know, butthead can wreck it for you.
Right.
Now, see, I don't give a damn.
Yeah, and I, you know, I think that if you taking that stance was some courage, and there's going to be people biting back on that. And that's fine.
But I don't think it's courageous because I am not dependent on patients for my livelihood.
Yeah, yeah.
If I was, would I be as courageous?
Right.
I don't know the answer to that because I have to support my family, right? So this is the thing. I think that's why I only see patients on a voluntary basis now. Because first of all, it keeps me angry.
Yeah.
I love to teach.
Right.
I feel like I can contribute something to the team and to the patient care. But really, it's because I can't take money for patient care because then I'm now beholden and I can't say things that I want to say.
Right.
You know, like if Stanford offers me a position, I won't take it. a paid position. Because,
why?
Well, because then what if I say something about, say, I don't know, I do a show on abortion and I piss off Stanford? Well,
yeah, you're done.
I'm done.
You're done. And the same thing would have been with me with the journal right now. If I had done something in the journal that they know it was mine, I was editing it and creating that. So some of the faking, you know, the fake ads would have got me in trouble, right? Because I could have been mocking not the pharmaceutical company, but I'm mocking the patients that take it.
Right, which is not
true.
Right.
Right.
Well.
So for example.
You're mocking certain stereotypes.
I had a great idea, and I think it was my first fake drug ad COPDers, they're going to smoke anyway, right?
Yeah.
So what if we just, on the inhaler, put like a little tube that you can just put the cigarette right at the end of the inhaler, right? So it's not only inhaler, but they're smoking while they're doing it. Because you know they're going to smoke while they're doing it.
Smoke event.
Yeah. So it was actually the discus had a smoking thing at the end of it. It was, or I had one where a COPD, they're so, you know, CO2 was so high. I mean, we actually created the COPD terrarium. You put them in like their own like fish tank kind of thing with the plants. It'll like accommodate their oxygen CO2 exchange. It's like you could actually seal them up.
Oh my God.
And it works out perfectly.
Dude, why do we think so alike? So I had, I've never said this publicly, but I think it's an amazing idea that I would patent if I could. It's injectable chlorophyll, TM, you put in hospitalized patients. So you inject it under the skin and they photosynthesize and it solves multiple problems at once.
Yeah, the CO2 part.
CO2 problems. So they're a retainer, they're a COPD. Now they're taking that CO2, fixing it into glucose and feeding themselves producing oxygen.
That would have been a page on the placebo journal.
Yep.
Perfect, right?
Just and you like come that, up with a name like Chlorafix.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it was like,
TM.
And you make the person all green. Like the, you
know, exactly, yeah, they're totally
we had
green.
Grandma in a terrarium, right? She was in a rocker with a big cigarette in her mouth. It was like, and there's all plants around her, and she's all sealed up, right? You just kind of slip food in once in a while.
So, the funny thing is, that's nerd humor at the highest level because, how does that work scientifically? Perfectly.
But you know what? Now you're attacking, at this day and age, you're attacking COPD.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? How can you have no sympathy for them?
So this came up, this comes up in my work because Vader is that voice of like,
right.
He's a bit harsh on patients because we all feel that sort of thing where if our patients just had some accountability, then we could go a lot farther. If we stopped tolerating behavior against physicians, for example, violence, nurses, it would be a better place. But we can't because we're worrying about our Press-Ganey satisfaction scores and
correct.
The metrics and the this and the that and our professionalism, what the board's going to say. It's, well, sometimes you just got to say, hell no. Like when you went to that resident and said, hey, you know what? Yeah. I'm going to beat your ass. And I'm not saying we say that.
No, we shouldn't do that. No, right. I do not condone that.
But this idea that, you know, there is a wall where we have to say, you know, it's like in the Lebowski. There's a line in the sand, man, that you do not cross.
Yeah. It's a fine line. Today I was in the gym in the morning. It was all these, you know, athletic trainers there. And I caught myself fat shaming somebody, you know, and I realized, I look in the mirror, and I realized it was me. Because I was the fattest guy in the room. And I'm like, that's bad on multiple levels, right? You got to be careful on what you do. Can you get in trouble for fat shaming?
You fat shamed yourself.
Yeah, because I caught myself a glimpse in the mirror and I started like, wow, who's that? Oh, man.
One time I found myself ogling this Asian woman. I was just like, oh, she's really hot. And she turned around, it was my wife.
Oh, okay, that's awkward.
And that's a story that I told her. I was like, you see?
Yeah.
And of course I was blamed for ogling.
No, you can't win.
I couldn't win.
Bottom line, how long have you been married?
It's going to be 16 years.
I just got my 30th year anniversary.
Hi,
Debbie. I love you. You win 2 arguments a year. Okay. That's all you'll ever get. You want to fight over that you want to make sure you pick your arguments that you're going to win.
Yeah.
You don't fight over, you apologize for everything unless it's important.
Great
advice. You only get 2.
Great advice.
Only 2.
I can't believe you get 2.
Yeah, that's right. I may not even get that. So
Tom's down to -2.
I have to, you know, listen, this is, we're in a really bad political correct world now that we were never in before, which makes it hard to do some of the fun stuff I think that could be done. Mm-hmm. I think the humor, you know, what we talked about Ken Jeong. So I was the first one that caught him he was on a comedy channel. So I found him. He's a doctor. I'm like, I thought that he was funny. We interviewed him for the Placebo Journal. We got along really well. And then we started communicating and then started like, let's write together, right? Mm-hmm. So we started, you know, I never met him in person, which is bizarre, right? We would email and call each other and we spent 6 months writing stuff out. But I'm like, and then he got his big break in Knocked Up as Dr. Cooney.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And then all of a sudden his manager said, hey, how much to fee are your stories? I'm like, wait, what? yeah, I want to buy your stories. Like, I'm not selling all my stories. And that was it.
Wow.
And so he did stay in touch with me, and we've communicated by email, and he's a real nice guy.
Yeah.
But then he came up with this Dr. Ken show.
Right.
And I don't know if it was that good. And it was not what he wanted. I know when we talked about it was going to be like The Office, but for
right.
with biting.
Would have been amazing.
Yeah, yeah, with biting. And that's so I went back and looked at the name. What were we thinking of as a name? Because it was like years later.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 years later. And it was like Dr. Ken. Like, oh, shit. That was the same,
oh, that was the same,
same name. It doesn't matter. It wasn't the same stuff. I wasn't that good, so I wasn't even going to fight about it. And God, you know, he's a very good actor. I think he's a great actor.
Yeah. Great comedian.
Yeah, he is. But I don't think he had the great stories. But I don't know if you can do that now, right?
Yeah.
I don't think you can do Scrubs anymore. I don't
no,
think
you can't,
you,
yeah,
I don't think you, what, you can't do MASH.
Yeah, no, you definitely can't do MASH.
MASH was, you know, he was a doctor from Maine, Hawkeye, right?
Hawkeye, yeah.
If you knew what he was like, I knew when I was training, I knew people, I rotated with somebody who was with him in Korea.
Wow.
He was a terrible name they had for him. He was a javelin thrower. I won't give the name, but he was in that book and the movie. And he used to tell me about this guy. Dude was the worst.
Really?
He was a bitter, angry dude.
Wow.
And he used to work for Workers' Comp at the end of his career. So Hawkeye Pierce worked at Workers' Comp. And when he got fired, I know this for a fact. There was a late, you remember, because workers' comp, you need pages and pages and pages of stuff to evaluate somebody. So his, when he got fired, I forget how many words, but it was three sentences or four sentences. He wrote, this lady comes to me for weakness of her hands, period, hell, period. She could squeeze the tits off a yak, period. And he got fired.
Wow.
That was Hawkeye Pierce. That's the true story. Got fired, and that was his last job.
Suicide is painless.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Dark humor.
Yeah.
And he was a bitter... those days are so different than when I trained. These days are different than then.
So speaking about that, so Sam Shem, the writer of House of God.
That's not his real name.
Not his real name. His real name, I forget his real
name. Richard...
You know what? So, and the reason I forget his real name is he told me to forget it when I talked to him on the phone recently. So, yeah.
Oh, no
one
kidding.
Of the highlights of my life was getting a call with Sam Shem. Someone had connected us. And the reason he wanted to speak was he watches our show.
Oh,
and he was like,
hey, dude, how are we doing?
Yeah.
I interviewed you with the Placebo Journal.
Amazing.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he spoke at my graduation for medical school, and many of the class turned their back to him because they were so angry about House of God.
So this is amazing. House of God is a transcendent piece of literature because it was the original satire.
Oh, it was great.
The gold standard of how much we hurt as physicians,
yes.
Right? And he brought it to life, and he's working on the sequel. It's almost out. And it's called,
He did another book,
but it wasn't a sequel to House of God. So the current sequel is everything that's wrong with medicine today, and it's called Man's Fourth Best Hospital. And the idea is that he used to work at Man's Best Hospital, right, in House of God, right? And it's presumably the Brigham or Mass General or something.
Yeah, I know.
And,
yeah.
But the metrics have changed,
and
30 years later, it's now down to Man's fourth best hospital.
Oh, that's his
and
take on that.
And the administrators are all trying to get it back up to, they're all meeting, like, how can we get it back to Man's first best hospital?
Right,
like,
right.
Do we need to turn it into a hotel? Do we need to give more Dilaudid? And so the fat man and his crew actually are now forming a competing clinic that's trying to bring humanity back into medicine.
God, the fat man with the matzo balls, right?
Yep.
Dude, I used to sit in bed, and my wife was like, what are you crying? There's tears in your eyes. You're laughing so hard.
It was
brilliant. Neuro level. I mean, stuff I can't even talk about now.
Right. Raising people to neuro height, ortho height.
Yeah,
and the word Gomer
of
Gomer Blogman came from that. Get out of my ER.
Yeah.
So you could not write a book like that today without the outrage culture on Twitter wanting to shut you down, patient advocates shutting you down. It's understandable. You get it. Okay, I understand. However, we are so bottled up as a species, physicians, that we can't say anything. And so our gallows humor comes out in these maladaptive ways. How about you write a book where you put it out there?
Yeah, so I have to see what he writes because, you know, I remember talking to him, and I'm trying to think about that interview. And I think what I found from that interview, he really had turned to a not exactly who I thought he was, a much nicer guy. I guess that was wrong the way to think about it. But, I mean, very caring thinking, and he was bothered by some of the things. He was definitely was shaken, even back then, right? That, you know, that he didn't even know students had turned around. And he's bothered by that you know, what he wrote, at least what I remember. And I could be wrong on this, but that it hurt some people because he's a very caring dude. That's what I remember talking to him about that. To write something and you're a very caring guy, that's going to be close to whether it's going to work again, right? I wrote the journal, not so caring, right? You know, right. So especially against administrators, drug companies, and so forth. And maybe he'll go hard and attack them.
It's interesting. He is a very empathic guy. Yeah. I got the sense that he was a pretty high-level thinker and very empathic. But the interesting thing is, I think he's now come to own House of God as the work that it... So whatever that phase was that he went through, I don't get that sense now, and I get the sense that he's on a mission to really create a transformative work that will actually open people's eyes. And so that's why he was connecting with
us. What's your transformative work?
You know what?
What's it going to be?
It's in progress constantly.
No, what it's going to be. There's got to be something bigger. And not that this isn't awesome. You got ideas. I'm just curious. So, seriously, right? I mean, you always... Some things wake you up in the middle of the night.
Well, so I'll tell you, like... we've talked about writing books. We've talked about doing an audiobook called Dictated, Not Read, just a pure audiobook about medicine, right? And
that name right there screams like that's like I would be laughing to myself at the table.
Exactly.
Like, my wife would be like, what are you laughing at?
Dictated, Not Read, the unauthorized autobiography.
Placebo Journal was idiopathic wit and wisdom.
See, that's brilliant.
Yeah, so it means nothing.
It means nothing, but it's brilliant. Yeah, exactly.
It was my laughter. I mean, this is so stupid.
Exactly.
I like that.
But in reality, it's a body of work. So maybe a song like 7 Years talks about the legacy and the calling of medicine. A song like Lose Yourself talks about overthrowing a broken system.
Yeah.
A song like Ain't the Way to Die talks about fixing end of life care. So it's a body of work that we try to create. So whenever we do something, we actually have a little Venn diagram.
Yeah.
There's creative, so it makes us feel good.
Yeah.
So any Doc Vader.
Okay.
Right. Any meta emoji where we're just talking out of our ass.
Yeah.
That's pure creative. Mission. So that's like, does it advance our overall cause, which is fix healthcare for everyone?
Yes.
Money. Is it a sponsored episode? Does it generate subscribers or ad revenue, et cetera? If the three overlap, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But more often than not,
nope.
It's one or the other. The things we hardly ever do anymore are just money. We used to in the early days because we need to support the show.
Yeah.
Now we have a groove. We have supporters that really pay the overhead.
Yep.
And so now we're free to go creative and brand. And if it happens to make a little money, wonderful.
So let me ask you, I think I mentioned this before in email. Hollywood's has come talk to you.
Great. See, this is, okay. You mentioned this when you talked about Ken Jeong's show.
Yeah.
Dr. Ken. Do you think Dr. Ken had creative control over his own show?
No, zero.
Zero.
Yeah.
And so I've been approached multiple times by multiple people, whether it's a documentary, whether it's a reality show, whether it's a movie, whether it's whatever on TV. Multiple times. And I've had conversations. Well, it's because I'm extroverted and...
And you have a big following. You have a big niche.
And they want to kind of suck that following.
They do want to. But also you're talented too. Listen, I even had somebody... There's a show, I think I mentioned this to you, but out of nowhere, they call me. It's a big cable show. It's going to be live cable show, doctors talking. I don't even know what it was. Whatever. And I'm like, I don't want to do this. It's not what I do anyway. I mean, not that I wouldn't take a chance at something, but I'm like, I don't know. Why would you want me? I'm an old man. All right, let's talk. So they talked to me. They talked to me. I'm like, I had no interest. This is the best part. This ends great, right? I have really no interest, but I'll go through it. I go through the thing. I'm like, I don't need this, but I'll go through it. They interview me by Skype. And I'm like, okay, guys, I'm going to move on. You probably have no. And then the person who in charge of the whole thing, the runner, whatever they call them.
Yeah, the showrunner.
Yeah, showrunner. He's like, gets on, listen, we love you. Great. Don't hear from for months, right? It's like, it reminded me, then I get back to them. I said, so what happened? Oh, yeah, we got things all ready to go, and they still won't say they're not going to take me, which is great. But it's like that Seinfeld episode where Kramer is like not getting paid, going to a job, and he's not even getting paid. They have to fire him. He's like, but I don't even work here. And he goes, that's what makes it so hard. It's like, I didn't even ask for the show, right? I didn't even ask for you to come talk to me.
And they make it such an ordeal.
Yeah, and make it an ordeal. I didn't even ask, and then I'm like, and you still don't give it to me? Like, and that's what makes it so hard. It's like, dude, God. I...
That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm whatever.
Welcome to that industry.
Oh my God.
It's a sick and rotten industry. So this is what I learned. I learned that very quickly. I did a few of these interviews and I realized these people will take all the control from you. They'll make you look like an idiot.
Right.
They will. You will betray your core audience, which are the people that I've worked for 10 years to grow the Z-Pack, this, you know, 2 million people across social media. And so the closest I came to doing that was just going on The Doctors a couple times, that show The Doctors.
Yes, yes.
And look, I got to talk about Health 3.0. I got to talk about this stuff. I made some jokes. It was fun. They asked me to come back and kind of co-host it for a month. And I was like, I looked at the response to that and I realized, this is not me. I'm dumbing everything down to the lowest common denominator.
Right.
I'm on crappy daytime TV. I have no control. And my own tribe, I can say anything I want, and it matters to me. So I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. And now if I get approached, I'm like, nope, don't do that. Not my thing. And it doesn't matter. And honestly, because Mike, see, this is the thing. When I was young, I wanted to be famous. It was like what I wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, Doug Farrago, if you can make me famous, I will do anything.
Yeah.
All right?
$20.
I will take a hit for the team. And then I hit 40 and started to actually get kind of famous.
Yeah, yeah.
And I realized fame is terrible. What's wonderful is having a purpose and an ability to influence for that purpose.
Right.
So quick story about that. So this morning, I've been flying around. I'm real tired. This morning, I got in at 3 a.m. last night because my flight was delayed. And I got up at like crack of dawn to get on another flight here so we could be on the show and so I could see these guys and do some content, which
we're doing. But more about me.
Really about you.
Yeah, okay.
1,000% about Doug Farrago. You know it.
Yeah.
You
know, I don't need this.
Pinch your cheeks if I could.
Enough of me talking about you, talk about me.
Exactly. So here's the funny piece about this. The Southwest flight is empty. The woman announces overhead, there are going to be 60 empty seats. So please pick a window and an aisle and don't sweat it. No one's sitting in the middle. So I'm sitting on a window and a woman comes and sits in, there's nobody else, and she sits right in the middle next to me. And I'm like, there's an empty seat. Yeah. Nobody chooses to sit in the middle for no reason next to another stranger.
Right, right.
So then another person decides they want the aisle, so they sit. So now she's the only middle seat. I'm crushed against the window like always on the cattle car Southwest. I'm already tired. I'm like, this is just weird. I'm looking around. There's no, all the middle seats are empty. I almost want to jump over one and sit in the middle seat because it'd be better. And the plane lands. We don't say a word. I'm like just listening to podcasts, catching up with work. And she turns to me and goes, by the way, I'm a big fan of the show.
Cool though, right?
And you know, my first response was, wait, so this is why she sat, and I was vaguely like irritated. And then I realized, wait, what an amazing gift.
That's a really cool thing.
That she actually didn't say a word. And she's like, I wanted to respect your privacy, but I also wanted to tell you, and I didn't think that if I were, and then she turns out she's an occupational therapist, and she does all this great work. And so fame in itself is terrible. Having a purpose and a connection and ability to influence people is awesome. And I think you do that with Authentic Medicine. You definitely did that with Placebo.
Yeah.
And because you influenced me, and I was this young, impressionable doc who wanted, and I was like, this guy's, he's saying what I want to say.
You're doing it now, and I'm just waiting for you to take that next leap. I just can't wait now. I know there's some, I don't know what it's going to be. The videos are awesome. They're a lot of work for you.
They are
a lot of freaking work.
We love it, yeah.
Yeah, so, and I know that's harder for you. I'm just wondering, I'm just thinking out loud what you're going to do. Even a 5-minute sketch show would work. Even a 2-minute sketch show would work.
You know what's weird, Doug, is like, the people ask me this all the time. So what's the vision for 5 years? Like, what's the next thing? And I'm like, you know what? The way me and Tom and Logan work is we're in this moment where we're lucky to have any of this stuff, any of this influence and ability to do what we love. We go moment to moment. So one day Facebook will come to us and say, you know what? There's this new subscriber channel we want you to alpha test. Let's do that. Suddenly our show is 50% private subscribers where we get to talk. You talk about like saying whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah.
To my supporters, I will say shit that would get anybody fired.
Yeah.
And they are sitting there going, I agree with you. You know what? But we're all in this closed group. It's great.
Best time is good. I know you because I've sat in that seat in a sense. And the best time is when you three get around and have an idea and can just laugh your ass off about an idea. Right? There is something about the community of people like-minded, sardonic, sarcastic, just even mocking yourselves when you do it. That's what gets missing for every superstar too. You know, you think about these guys that started out as whatever, it's Vince Vaughn and Favreau in the beginning, right? We're doing sort of the Swingers. Yeah. Right? I'm sure they missed those days to go back.
Your
there.
Money and you don't even know it, man.
Yeah, that was great. Right, so, but the way they could do, now I know he's doing every Lion King and everything else, but I'll bet you he'd love to go back to the days. Maybe he wants to be younger again, but go back with Vince Vaughn and just write and have fun and do this stuff. And you're not losing that. That's good, because I think that's with you guys, figured out a way to do that. It's going to be incredible. So that's awesome.
It's fun, man. And that's why these two clowns are still along for the ride, because we can't break up the band, even though we're back and forth to the Bay Area. We're in Vegas for another couple months. But the truth is, this is a team that it actually works.
Right.
You could harp on different things and go, well, we'd be more productive if we worked 8-hour days and did this and this. But we don't work that way. Creatively, we're best in the morning. Then we edit in the afternoon.
Right.
Some days we don't do anything, and then I'll just do shows from home. And if we have the physician mentality, which is more work solves everything.
Right.
You break it.
Right.
If you have the attitude of like, I create for this purpose and I'm doing it, then it actually comes more naturally. So that's one of the creative, I'm sure you experienced that with Placebo Journal.
Yeah. So
probably a deadline.
The hard part is the stupid crap, right? It's the administrative crap. And so maybe I shouldn't be so hard on administrators, but you know,
I feel really bad for administrators. I'll be honest. It's a hard job.
But you know, that's, I don't want to do, I'd rather be the creative part, and that's not always realistic. And so, you know, writing, I had like Vance and some other people do it. And that was, and I'd write as well. But once I started getting back off writing, like even with Authentic Medicine, I'm writing less because so many other people want to write. I'm like, I miss it because, so I have to jump in and do some of that. I work in spurts because you can't work consistently all the time in the creative mode. I don't know how many doctors are creative. I have no idea how that is. And some people do it in different ways. But for me, it's definitely like I'm a big swing where I can hit a bunch of things. I'm like, I've written 4 books. I have another book coming now, and I have another book that's fiction that I've been, you know, I'm always doing stuff to kind of, listen, the job is an algorithmic job that you need knowledge base as a physician, but you got to work algorithms. You can't say, okay, you know what, I'm going to treat this patient with gummy bears and Kool-Aid and see if that works. You have to follow, you can't be creative on how you treat
people. That's delicious, Dougie Fresh.
It is delicious, but you can't be, you have to do it. And obviously, you got to do your job as a physician, right? So your left side, left brain. How are you not left brain as a physician? You can't all be the Patch Adams thing, right?
Yeah.
Which was Robin Williams, by the way. Did you ever meet talk to Patch?
I've talked to him via Twitter, but not in person.
Not that fun.
Oh, he's a pretty intense guy.
I think he's got a great heart, but I used to call me a lot when I was doing the Placebo Journal. I'd be like on the phone, like with the mic up and like doing work, because he'd be go on and on and on. And it's like, dude, I wish you worked out Robin Williams, because he was so much more fun.
Oh.
So, okay, but you know, you can't do the Robin Williams thing as a physician. You can't. You'd be done too. We talked about that before. You're out.
Yeah.
You can't jump around and make funny things. And if the wrong person gets pissed off, you're going to the board, you're going to get suspended.
Yeah.
Being have that right side to be creative, what you're doing now is a whole different world. And I'm not sure how many doctors do that. They do it in different ways. For me, it was what we just talked about. And I definitely go in spurts where I'm highly creative, and then I go where, you know, I want to kill myself. No.
Well, let me ask this as we close up here, because we've been going, man, this is a great conversation. This is like inside the actor studio for weird medical parody people, of which there are 2.
Yeah.
Maybe 2.5.
Yeah.
If you count Tom. He's not quite a doctor.
Tom, I haven't you talk at all, and I'm kind of pissed about that.
He can't. He doesn't have a mic. He doesn't have a mic.
Oh, that kind of sucks.
We used to give him a mic, but then I learned better of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But no. So let me ask you this question, Doug Farrago. What advice would you give, like, because I'd say actually a lot of doctors are creative, but it's stifled and it's beaten out of them. What advice would you give to up-and-coming people who want to do the stuff that you've done and that maybe I'm trying to do?
Yeah. You are more than a doctor. Leave it at that line. You're more than a doctor. So don't, that can't be your full identity. If it's your full identity, you'll live and die with that identity. And you think you need to do other things to keep yourself mentally challenged, to keep yourself sane. And you need to do that other stuff, whether it's painting, whatever, hiking, it doesn't matter. You're more than a doctor. And we get locked into just you're a doctor, and that becomes everything about you. And I think you'll lose your family. It's hard. It's a hard job. Make sure you expand out so that you're more than a doctor, because so many people forget that.
That's actually brilliant, wise advice.
And well, I just made it up.
Pretty
so
freaking good.
It reminds me, like, what was that joke? The guy goes to see the person at the top of the mountain and whatever, and climbs for days to get there and for to find that great advice. And he says, what's the meaning of life? The meaning of life, it's life is like a box of cherries. He goes, I came up all the way here and you're telling me life is like a box of cherries? And the guy goes, I mean, it isn't? Okay. Maybe we don't have the answer.
Who knows?
That's my thoughts right now. I've been around a long time. These gray hairs are for a reason. I've seen young doctors come up to me with DPC. I've seen doctors, hear me talk. And my only advice is that, you don't pigeon yourself. Enjoy your job, but it can end at any time. Enjoy your life as well.
And we're going to put some links into some direct primary care stuff, some of your books, the Cryo Helmet.
Yeah, I'm very proud of it. Actually, all BS aside, I am very proud of that product because I think it's helped a lot of people.
Do you know what? You know what I'm proud of?
And thanks for putting me on with that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Hey, come on, Doug.
I forgot my wallet.
That'll be $500.
That's what Ferris, Tom Ferris, he charges that, right?
Too, oh, does he?
It's like $100,000.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So I want to pitch you my last thing as we go.
Yeah.
I have an invention, too.
Go.
And it's important to people who are follicularly challenged like myself.
Yes.
Listen, it's very hard to get enough transplanted hair.
Yes.
Up here.
Yes.
And my hair is innately curly with many split ends.
Yes.
So here's the pitch, the pupae.
Yes.
It is a pubic hair toupee because pubic hairs are lush.
Yes.
They always grow back no matter how much you shave them.
Sure.
They have beautiful split ends, lustrous hair. Why can't that be a thing?
I think that'd be tougher. I think you'd have more luck creating a pill to shrink your head. So the hair that you have kind of...
That's actually an interesting angle.
So you have a miniature head, but whatever hair you have left covers it.
Well, because my backup plan was the back hair treatment. But it'll have to do.
Dude, I love coming here talking to you. This made my hour.
This was really fun for me, man.
Awesome.
This is truly a thing I've been wanting to do for a long time.
So I came to Vegas for this. Part of this was the vendor thing, but really I was really bummed this may not have happened. And I'm glad I got to come talk to you guys again. We met at the NADA show a couple of years
ago. National Athletic Trainer Association, yeah.
And you were all over in these posters. I'm like, dude, this guy's made it so freaking big. I am so proud of this dude.
Are you jealous of me, Doug Frago? Because you shouldn't be, because you are the gold standard.
That's actually, to seriously question, I'll go back to the talent thing. Your shows and your speeches and your what you do up there is so unique, and so I could never have done that. I do talks and stuff too, and there's some humor in there, but what you do is a performance.
Well, I'm going to say this because I think I was very jealous of you and the work you're doing and still am because I think you're doing something that I can't do, which is, again, that really hilarious kind of written stuff. And I've seen your talks and I got to pitch this. This I got to pitch. If you guys want, and it's got to be a medical audience, can't be administrators. If you want a hard-hitting, hilarious freaking keynote, this guy will rock the show, man, because he can say stuff that I could never say in a keynote and it's freaking hilarous. Doug Frago.
Thanks.
And I got to shake your hand.
I appreciate it, man. You're a good man. We're going to kiss later, I know.
Oh, yeah, we are.
Okay.
And there's going to be tongue.
Did we just become best friends?
Okay, best magazine to beat off to.
Good housekeeping.
Oh, man, I missed that line. It was not coming to me. Brilliant.
Stepbrothers, we didn't make that up. You can't blame me for that.
Yeah.